This is The Light Inside. I'm Jeffrey Biesecker. Rumination. Has your head ever been filled with one single thought, or maybe a string of thoughts, that seem to keep repeating and repeating and repeating themselves? The process of continuously thinking about the same thoughts, which sometimes tend to be sad or dark, are often what we've come to know as rumination. When you look back into your distant past, what emerges? How did your experiences shape your view of yourself and your understanding of the world? As you engage in your present relationships, your current communications, and even trading comments on social media, do you sometimes feel your emotions are beginning to get the best of you? Honey, if you do, the chances are more than good that maybe your trauma is doing the talking. If you find yourself feeling that often isolating loneliness of trauma, today we'll share how the journey of healing begins when we return to The Light Inside. As human beings, perhaps one of our greatest gifts is to be intimately aligned with our emotions. Yet rather surreptitiously, sometimes seemingly insidious outside forces seep into our psyche. And thus begins our sometimes strained relationship with the process of feeling interaction, the worlds we inhabit, and even those we share it with. Emotional self-regulation at times may seem the most difficult task we will ever have to complete. This task is often made even more challenging when we've experienced emotional trauma in the past. But fear not, there is hope. With a few achievable skills, exercises, and strategies, emotional regulation can become your new healthy normal. Marina Yanae Triner is a self-proclaimed empath and trauma expert. She dives into the world of repressed trauma and how it affects our everyday lives. This episode of the Light Inside podcast is all about trauma and how it can show up in our lives in seemingly innocuous ways. Marina learned about trauma and its effects while working through it in her own counseling experiences. She frequently discusses how we often react out of trauma without even realizing it, and how this can create drama throughout our lives. Trauma can be caused by a variety of things, including childhood experiences, generational patterns, and even seemingly small things like not being able to control a situation. Trauma can manifest in a variety of ways, including numbing behaviors, anger, and a need for control. Therefore, it's important to be aware of how trauma might be affecting us personally, allowing us to work through it in a more productive manner. Marina, it appears that there are circumstances and situations that just appear out of nowhere throughout our lives, triggering a chain of difficult events that overwhelm us like a tsunami. You've mentioned in our previous conversations how you've learned to deal with similar experiences yourself, having worked through your own healing resulting from various childhood traumas. Beginning today, how do we start to uncover and remove some of these trauma triggers throughout our lives?
100%.
We react out of that trauma space so often and we don't even know it.
That
emotional reactivity so often comes from that trauma base. I've realized from my own past trauma experience, going back and walking through with a counselor, going through some of that myself, how to learn that then and say, now I can recognize that not only in seeing it in myself and then realizing and stepping out of that pattern so you don't run into that reactivity and create so much of that, what we deem drama in life, You learn to see it and say, okay, first and foremost, how am I relating to my trauma and projecting that out? Do I make that assumption in somebody and then kick into that reactive mode? You know, now I've learned not to step into that. And then, you know, as a result, you open your relationships, you open yourself to the potential. You also don't limit the possibility of that relationship by saying, but I made this expectation and this harsh judgment on it.
Totally.
Now I can accept that person for where their true battles are, where their true relationship to it is also, and then not create a lot of those blocks that become the drama.
Mm-hmm. Or the story, yeah, the drama, the story we tell ourselves.
That creative narrative, not only for your own experience, but how then do you project that back to others? Because so much of that then is where the real drama happens. You start to project that trauma out into the world and it starts bumping into everything, like running through a forest with your eyes closed. You know, in this one circumstance, the individual, we had had a pre-talk and had a real good discussion. And I said right away, it's like, I get a sense that if I'm aware of what's going on here and just allow it to be and accept it, there's something deeper. I started doing a little investigation work and hadn't connected for a couple months with this individual. And they had dealt with some COVID issues where they got COVID, a lot of health issues. I said, more than likely, that's what's going on. Sure enough, a day later, I get a message from the individual apologizing needlessly to me about I'm dealing with all of these recurring things and I am so sorry. I'm like, there's no need for sorriness in that. That's one of those things where then that trauma becomes another projection, another kind of echo or ripple from that.
Yeah. And it's so easy to kind of blame the other person and outsource, you know, like it's them. And not look internally like, why am I so triggered right now? Why am I so pissed off? Why am I so reactive? So true.
I think that's a cool angle. Yeah, would you be opposed to kind of looking at that today?
That sounds awesome.
I know that's kind of a little counter in some regards to what we threw out there, which I think we can bring some of that boundary setting, more of your genius and specialty being that somatic recognition and inner work.
Mm-hmm. That sounds great. I love it. I love when it's like out of a real life situation, you know?
I've said with that today, and I kind of had my own traumatic inspired battle with it in some way. And I realized that some of that trauma coming back to say, here's an echo of, in a lot of ways, you know, that need to control. I was listening to one of your conversations with one of your hosts and kind of a green light going on for this individual as I watched them kind of reach this unveiling in themselves where it's like, wait a minute, maybe I had a trauma I didn't realize. And that's my reflection on it. That's my assumption on it. As a coach, so often that can be a case where we meet a client, you know, I don't know, let's look at it from your angle. You're a little more specific on your target audience. So from your experience, do you often get people who come to you with things outside of dealing with trauma and that empathic relationship?
Yeah, yeah. I do have some clients who are like, if they listen to this, they're going to laugh. I don't have any trauma. And I'm like, okay. Yeah. And then, you know, it's revealed because we all do, every single one of us does that old story that then triggers something exactly like you were saying and wakes up in those moments. And it's clear because not every single one of us would react, right? Like to the same situation, like every single person would react slash respond differently to every situation. So when we find ourselves in that reactivity, and I love that you like caught yourself, and I do that all the time. I have so many stories too about myself. Human.
That's the great thing about once you start to uncover some of these things, if you get past the other little prickly, somewhat, you know, we call prickly sticking points, they truly do empower you because you can start to become aware and see it, feel it, think it, process it, release it. That mantra we live on by here in our community of experiencing anything in life, you know, and when that point of reaction is that emotional reactivity, instead of being responsive to it, instead of, you know, relating to it, instead of from it.
Yeah.
You start to see a whole different view unfold in front of you. You can say, wait, I catch myself and I'm not judging myself for it. I'm not doing all of these repetitive cycles of beating myself up. You know, it's, do we go down that road again, even in our own conversation about it today?
Yeah. And it's all the stuckness patterns. Like when you're just stuck in a pattern of behavior or thought.
Yeah.
Like you were saying, you know, the judgment or behaviors like procrastination or sabotaging your own success or different things like that. That's when you know that there may be some trauma there that's driving that.
So I'm looking at this as I'm prepping up this morning and totally focused on connecting with that direction we spoke of, you know, uncovering more of that embodied sense of trauma and connecting with that. You know, and there again, this is your area of genius. How you connect and how you relate to it from your experience really allows you to excel. As I'm prepping for that, I'm looking and saying, we've put a lot of awareness in that, and that's fabulous. You know, that opens a lot of doors, but there's a part of me in the back that keeps saying, but what about when that trauma, like you mentioned, is repressed or uncovered? When it's being pushed back, how do we help bridge people to realize that? You know, so often we're relating to those more devastating, potentially devastating, more drastic senses of trauma, you know, looking at abuse and looking at things like that, that it's the more prevalent. I'm searching here a little bit. It tends to be a little bit more in the forefront.
Yeah. So you're saying that the narrative, like in the mainstream, is trauma is this extreme.
Yeah. It's thing that extremism. Happened. The extremism. Mm-hmm. There we go. Mm-hmm. Thank you. Thank you for bringing that to me, Maureen. Yeah. It's the extremism. And I'm not downplaying or diminishing that, because that is right there in the forefront. But so often, and I know, especially with my clients, as I've started to learn and grow more with uncovering and resolving my own trauma relationships, with going through my own healing process of my past traumas, it's opened a lot of doors to me then to say, now I realize and understand when clients come to me, how to start foreseeing some of these traumas and saying, aha, you know, that's the hot button point that says, this is a potential trigger for that.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not so much just being able to recognize the specific trauma, but some of those pathways that lead up to it.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's so easy to focus on the behavior piece, like, well, just set your alarm or just like, just do X, Y, Z. And I've always been fascinated with like, how do we actually like shift? How do we actually transform a behavior specifically that's like not working, or like manifest things? I mean, in the woo way, but also like, if I really want a successful career, like how do I make that happen? And when I feel stuck in it, like it's not happening, it's not being created, like what's going on there? And what you're speaking to, which I so agree, is like, it's not going to work. Maybe it'll work for a week to set an alarm or these little shifts. But the deeper thing here is trauma that is very seemingly not trauma, right? Like it's well, you know, it could be from when you were a baby, and it could even be from before you were born in the generations. And that affects your life now and gets you stuck, because I really believe that we inherently strive towards goodness. Like every part of us wants goodness. We want to create it. We want to be it. We want to live it. But then something comes in that kind of blocks that. And it's not us necessarily, like it's not intentional. It's very subconscious.
Those little tiny friction points that so many of us can experience. I like to frame it in that way, because once we start to kind of frame it in, we all do it, then we start to create our own ripples of trauma in some ways. Some people do, some people don't. Very frequently, there's a vast majority of us that do. Looking at it from that angle and backing up a step, so often we associate that instance of trauma taking root either in our past occurrence or either in that frame of challenging environments. So often I think we miss the boat to talk about when those traumas kind of rear up out of what are seemingly and normally described as a happy, stable, loving childhood.
Totally.
Those inner child injuries and woundings can happen from some of the most seemingly unlikely sources.
Yeah. Yeah. You know? So true.
We think we've went down this path. Well, everything was great by most circumstances. So, you know, we run into that place where we put into that pigeonhole of, I'm in somewhat of a denial about it. Mm-hmm. As you mentioned, the clients that will step forward, there are those instances where we see someone come forward and say, I don't have that, you know, which in and of itself is kind of a natural response to any trauma. Would you not agree?
Yeah, it totally is. And You know, I think there's also like some, I was talking about this with a friend last night, the cultural aspects to it too, yes. Because I'm not from the US originally. And I think here there's like an over positivity, like it's almost like toxic positivity. Even in the coaching world.
Very charged in that way. Yeah.
Yeah. Even in my opinion, even in the coaching world, like it's like, be positive, smile, you know, which I love that. I do love smiling and laughing and all of that. And, you know, that's part of life. But I think if your life is just that, you're not really living, you're not really alive. You're just denying parts of yourself, and you cannot be fully alive when you deny parts of yourself, because we need to be whole. We need to strive to our wholeness.
That very notion of denial, you know, there is where that line's overstepped, because you start to pad against the fact that we do as human beings so often experience those things that, you know, can trigger us in that direction. And there again, it's that triggering that pushes us one direction or the other. When we start to cover it up and say, I'm just going to neglect feeling this, there's a fine line there to me. Some of that you can do, and it's productive. Is it being effective? You're just, like we said, back into that denial. I'd like to look at some of those ways you might feel, you know, as somebody who focuses on trauma, that those actual symptoms, you know, symptoms for lack of better word at the moment for me, start to surface in our behaviors. Some of those little things where somebody might be triggered and reacting in that way. And when that trauma resurfaces, becomes another behavior.
Yeah. Yeah. That's such a great point. All the numbing things, all the myriad of numbing things, like, you know, scrolling endlessly or overthinking or, you know, I mean, obviously like drinking, gambling, that type of stuff, but it's also things that we do every day, like little numbing things where sometimes you're like, oh my gosh, what was I just doing? Like, I forgot, you know, in the last half an hour, I completely dissociated. Also, of course, there's like very intense reactivity, rage, anger, I think is great. I think we should love it and respect it. But when it comes to rage and kind of taking it out on other people, are those times when you look back and you're like, that was a little disproportionate, like how I felt and how I reacted to the situation didn't match the situation really. So what's going on there? And then, all the numbing things. I mean, a lot of my clients are very good at it. And I think all humans are. And I think there's a place for it. Like you said, there definitely is. We can't just constantly be facing trauma or like constantly dealing with pain.
Yeah.
Sometimes we numb, sometimes we have fun because it's fun, and sometimes we numb and they're both good. But I always ask, like, is it serving you, whatever you're doing? You know, is the behavior serving you? Are you in balance now? Like, are you drinking for fun? Like, are you drinking a glass of wine a day, or are you drinking to like not feel?
I know this is a big one you mention and talk a lot in several of the conversations I've witnessed of yours. Control being a big one. Mm-hmm. And that's another one where it's a lot of fine, seemingly gray area. You know, what is balanced awareness of something and being responsive to it versus that need to kind of domineer and overtake things. That in and of itself is a fine, nuanced gray line that as human beings, we all, you know, we all, I caught myself. That's a generational pattern. Frequently can be experienced by many of us.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I love that you also said gray area, because I just wrote a post about this. I'm going to share it soon, but how trauma is like so... like we want black and white, like we just want the answer. And we just want, like, we don't want to think about the gray area and, like, you know, nothing is almost nothing. A lot of things are not inherently bad. It's just, how are you doing it? What is it serving you? Like, you know, how much are you doing it? So when we are reactive from trauma, it's like, I want black and white, yes or no. This person's good, this person's bad, you know? And I catch myself doing that too. So yeah, control is a huge one, because trauma is all about losing control, losing safety, losing feeling helpless, feeling overwhelmed and helpless in a situation. So then we kind of really crave that sense of control, and we can take it out and in some unhealthy ways, whether it's controlling other people or controlling ourselves through food, through exercise, and really struggling to let go. Like you were saying, like people didn't book or didn't show up. Okay. There must have been a deeper reason I just let go. That sense of flow does not show up when we are reactive, right?
No, like that. No. And it often can bump up against that. Now, I'm not saying that I'm completely exonerated of it. You know, there are little voices back there sometimes that triggers a little ripple back there. And I love that you bump that back to that notion, you know, intuitively spoke to me of control. That gray area is one of the most frequent things that we bump into as a result of that trigger. Reaching to find that black and white when so much of our experience in life bumps into all of these
complexity.
And it's only as complex as we make it. It's just that brilliance of life being so guided by circumstance and happenstance. Of the wonderful variables we all bring, because that's one of the things we all do bring is our own variable to that equation.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like you just can't control life. Life just like happens, and you can choose to respond or you can react, right? Yeah. And like, it didn't go exactly as I wanted. Yeah. And we all do it, like every single one of us. There's no one so enlightened. Maybe Eckhart Tolle, I don't know. Byron Katie and Eckhart Tolle. But other than them, I think we all do it. And it's really about, oh, I just did that. Okay. You know, that awareness.
That to me bumps me into, you know, that area then of lashing out, being that result of that trauma response, of that need to control. And there again, we're looking at gray, you know, where is that shade of how do you start to form an awareness of how and when as an individual, you yourself might be lashing out. We look at that from so often the angle of just aggression, anger, that more kind of boisterous way of showing it, where we don't quite recognize some of those micro instances of it, some of that more kind of what we might deem passive aggressive.
That's the spectrum of my family for sure.
Kind of tiptoeing back into somewhat of a potentially jaded and overused cliche, that passive aggressive, where, you know, you're not being so outward about it, but it's there.
Yeah. Yeah. That's definitely a big part of my family was like that, the passive aggressive. And it's like just noticing your nervous system as you do that. Like you're not present. You're not in the moment. You're not curious. You're just shut down or overstimulated, right? Like, and so, not fun. It's not fun to live in that state for sure. And I think the more healing we do, the less we live there. The more we're just curious and open and not judgmental.
When it comes to mobile service providers, with their high rate plans, extra fees, and hidden costs or expenses, many of the big name networks leave a bad taste in your mouth. Mint Mobile is a new flavor of mobile network service, sharing all the same reliable features of the big name brands, yet at a fraction of the cost. I recently made the change to Mint Mobile, and I can't believe the monthly savings, allowing me to put more money in my pocket for the things which truly light me up inside. Making the switch to Mint Mobile is easy. Hosted on the T-Mobile 5G network, Mint gives you premium wireless service on the nation's largest 5G network. With bulk savings on flexible plan options, Mint offers 3, 6, and 12-month plans, and the more months you buy, the more you save. Plus, you can also keep your current phone or upgrade to a new one, keep your current number or change to a new one as well, and all of your contacts, apps, and photos will seamlessly and effortlessly follow you to your new low-cost Mint provider. Did I mention the best part? You keep more money in your pocket. And with Mint's referral plan, you can rescue more friends from big wireless bills while earning up to $90 for each referral. visit our Mint Mobile affiliate link at thelightinside.us/sponsors for additional mobile savings, or activate your plan in minutes with the Mint Mobile app. That sense of belonging and acceptance, to me, is, you know, such a crucial thing that keeps coming to the forefront. I'm going to put this intention out into the atmosphere. That's an area I would love to invite somebody in and have a really in-depth conversation. You know, what are some of the inner workings of that?
Diane Poolheller.
Right on. I'm going to look that one up. Thank you very much. I'm grateful for that suggestion.
Yeah, she does work on attachment, like attachment styles, attachment trauma. It's so fascinating. But yeah, it's, do you know, have you heard of Gabor Mate?
Yes, actually, that was a reference point I was going to throw in at some point, that looking at that big quote that trauma is not what happens to you, it's what happens inside of you.
Yeah.
You know, kind of was my connecting point with Gabor Mate.
Yeah. And he also talks about, and that quote really shows what you were saying in the beginning, which is like, it doesn't matter what happened. It could have been like something where you're like, oh, that's not a big deal, but it is for that person because of what's happening internally. But the other thing that he talks about, and so many like teachers talk about, is this constant tension that we have between authenticity and belonging, like being ourselves fully and being approved of. And it's like a constant, again, gray area where it's like, how can I need both? Like, we all need both as humans. And it's so funny because like some of my clients are like, oh, I could just do everything by myself. And I'm like, that's your trauma talking. because we can't, we need people. We like absolutely need people. We are communal beings, but we also need to know how to be ourselves with people. And to find that middle ground, it's so tricky of like, where do I lose myself in relationships? And where am I an asshole? like, I don't care about anyone, and I'm right. So
how did you pick out one of my big trauma trigger sources? You know, because I can slip across that gray and come across as that asshole sometimes, and very much be, I'm going to own it, be that asshole sometimes. And I have to recognize and acknowledge it and say, put your finger on it, own it, redirect it. So much of what one experiences of trauma is felt, you know, we feel it, we sense it, yet it's unknown.
Yeah.
You know, it seems foreign to us. It seems unfamiliar, but we get that kind of friction, prickly sensation of it.
Totally. Yeah. And in that moment when you're being an asshole, maybe you're like, I don't know if I want to do this. Like, it's not intentional, right? It's like,
it can't be like, a very powerful response. Like,
Yeah, I feel like I have to, like, this is what I'm supposed to do. It's the same with like people pleasing and not having boundaries. It's like, I feel like I have to, otherwise I'm in danger. And that's really like, that's, it's so amazing when you actually tap into that sense of danger. And I wonder if you could maybe one day do that as you're being an asshole. Like, underneath that is that sense of danger of like, if I don't do this, something bad's going to happen, you know? So that's where a lot of my self-compassion comes from when I am being an asshole.
And that self-compassion is the key. How do you remove the judgment of it, remove the projection towards others of it, become aware of it, and say, now I move into discernment. There's a way to
that word.
Direct without being an asshole. There is a way to be assertive without being an asshole and stepping on yourself or anyone else. And if you're stepping on someone else, you're going to step on yourself. Mm-hmm. You have to step over yourself to get to anyone else. That discernment of being confident versus being whatever state you might put into opposition with that, that fine gray line.
Yeah, I think that's a huge practice all the time. I used to have very little self-compassion, so I'm pretty like proud of where I've reached. But one thing that really helps me is knowing that our nervous system state, the state of our nervous system, really determines our psychology. And so like, if I walk into a room, If I walk into the kitchen and the kitchen looks like crap and I'm already anxious, like I've had an anxious day, I'm anxious, I will probably yell at my partner and just be like, what did you do here? This sucks. Like, what's going on? Like, clean up the kitchen, just be mean. If I walk in there and I'm shut down, I already feel shut down internally. And I see that, oh my God, he's never going to clean this kitchen. It's always going to look like this. Oh, that's going to be my story. If I walk in there and I'm like, pretty good, I've had a great day, I feel open, curious, connected, I'll be like, hey, the kitchen looks great. And I'll, you know, make a joke out of it. That's my way lately. Like, it looks like you did some giant experiment and I don't know if I want to taste it, but yeah, then he'll laugh and be like, yeah, yeah, sorry. I'm going to clean up. Sorry. I left it this way. Right. So it's like,
yes,
that really helps me have so much self-compassion because I don't go into the mind. I'm just like, oh, I get where the monster just came out of. Yes. I'm already triggered. Like my system is already in this fight or flight anxious state. So of course I'm going to be an asshole in this moment.
I love that, you know, you mentioned that little monster and connecting that somewhat with the emotional state of reactivity. For me, you know, I look at that and it kind of registers or projects outward, surfaces as what we very often label as childish behavior or childish outburst. Mm-hmm. I want to reel in and look at that. You know, when we are younger, so often we can witness children doing it where you're throwing kind of that tantrum, you're acting out, exhibiting these things that are in response to the world around you. That to me is one of the biggest ways to realize if you might be in a little bit of denial or if you might be kind of disconnected from those traumas to say, wait a minute, there's something here. Is this a childish behavior? Because that child, that inner wounded child is stepping forward and saying, we're still kind of stuck back in that phase.
Totally.
And the way I relate to it is by going back and reliving it, reacting it, replaying that and becoming that again.
Yeah, totally. And, you know, sometimes we don't even have the specific memory that's connected to the present moment. Because like in that moment, we're 5 or 6, right? And we're living, we're reacting to the past, but in the present moment, because our present self probably wouldn't do that.
Yes.
So it's like reacting to the past. And so I have so much compassion for that child, but also like, those emotions are messengers. So if I'm like super angry, well, I probably haven't set boundaries. I'm probably not getting my needs met. Like something's going on. So I can look at that. I can deal with my anger instead of taking it out on other people and process that a little bit and really sit with what's going on for me. Why am I so angry? And then in connections with others, like communicate that from a very calm nervous system rather than reactive. So like I've been learning to deal with my reactivity and I have plenty of it on my own. And yeah, and like also recognize like something real is going on. Like my needs are not being met. Like it's not just, oh, trauma, get over it.
Yeah, that's not to push back into that area of shame that so often becomes its own source of trauma, becomes its own stuck point, its own friction of then, you know, either yourself shaming it or engaging in and being caught in, you know, shaming cycles from others.
Yeah.
That's a fine line. Everything. So often we run into that fine line where it's an either, not even an either or. A yes and.
Yes
opens
and.
A lot of doors and keeps the gate open to just discover. As soon as we start to look at that either or, we start to close that door on whatever that potential is.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I love the yes. And it's like a much harder way to live. I feel it really is. It's more complicated. It's like our brain just wants the black and white, but
we can make it more hard or we can just lovingly accept it with compassion and say, yeah, but there's a lot of gray and that's just the fact of life.
Yeah.
It's just a potential in life. It might not even be the fact.
Yeah. And I love that you brought in the shame too, because shame is like really that shutdown, collapse, hopelessness, you know, and it prevents us from looking at things and from really being with things. So, and it's a huge part of trauma. Like every trauma comes with shame, because as soon as you remove that shame and you start talking about things and you're like, oh, this is what I did and this is how I feel, it's like trauma just goes down. Like it just kind of gets smaller.
So often that shame gets so embroiled, we start to project it outward. Mm-hmm. We start, you know, to move into that asshole phase and find ways to either find that shame in others or project that shame onto others.
Yeah. Yeah, totally.
That's one to sit with. How do you start to realize that? If you're taking ownership and authorship of your life, if you're becoming more responsible for who and what you are, moving out of that victim mode.
That was one of the best questions of my whole life. When I was like 20, I asked myself, what do I enjoy about being a victim? It was a hard one.
And that's grabbing the bull by the horns now.
Yes.
What do I enjoy about this crap?
Well, that's what humans do, you know. If we keep doing the same thing, we're getting a benefit. So I was like, what's the benefit? What's the benefit that I keep getting? Because I keep doing it. And it was love and attention from everyone. So it's like, oh, that's what I need that I'm not getting. And I think I still will continue to sit with that one. Mm-hmm. But whenever we have a pattern that just keeps repeating, it's really asking, what do I enjoy about procrastination? What's the need that I'm getting? You know, what am I getting here?
Yeah, and that's a gray again, you know, procrastination. The bubble come up, let's look at it. When do you cross that line between true procrastination, putting things off, and listening to that somatic experience that says there's a need that genuinely isn't being met, whether that's a need for rest, whether that's a need for purpose, whether that's, you know, a need for validation in what you're doing, whether sometimes that's just a need to not do a god darn thing. Mm-hmm. Is a very real need that so often we push back based on patterning, based on projection programming, based on our own sense of shaming, which very often is a trauma response.
I think it's always a need, honestly, now that you put it that way. I think it's always a need. Like maybe it's like as simple as just resting or like, I cannot keep going and doing. But maybe it's like even, you know, deeper than that. Like there's some need that this 5-year-old child didn't get. So I'm going to procrastinate, you know? I've been unraveling that one.
Very frequently pivotal point. I like to frame it that way. Pivotal point, because it is something that teeters back and forth based on where you squarely root what that core value is to you. Is significantly meaningful for me in this moment often becomes that defining character. And so often we guilt and shame that down and say, but this pattern says this, but this trauma says this, but this outside voice says this. And then you start to set that drama of struggle between what you intuitively know to be right in the moment, what's projected to be the expectation in the moment or in the future. And it just becomes this needless wrestle that usually takes you nowhere and creates, ironically, 20 times the gap in your ability to react or act or assertively take any kind of action out of. Yeah. You've spent more time going through the battle, creating a sense of failure, creating a sense of challenge. That's how I'm going to step into this today, because to me, that's a big one I can see becoming limitation in a lot of ways and just propped up with common projected pattern of how we view it.
Yeah. I think life is meant to be with more ease.
And yet we can stigmatize that. It so often becomes stigmatized to find ease, to find comfort. I was curious today, and this is one that constantly pulls into my awareness. I'm a researcher. There's something inherently that has developed in me. And I don't even want to question it beyond that, because I've found a lot of ways to make service of it that says, look at the meaning of things. I went back and looked at this notion of comfort and how so often we can each find our way to pick that apart, find ways to either make it work for us or against us. What's the very root of comfort? You know, I'm like, do we actually hold on to our core intended meaning with it? We go back to look at comfort at its root, and it's rooted in Latin, guided by the concept of strength, of finding enrichment, of knowing is what the true source of comfort was intended to mean. Yet throughout our history as human beings, we found a way to unravel that and weighed it down with negativity, weighed it down with impossibility rather than its core intention of signaling strength, knowing, and possibility. We look at comfort as something so often to be avoided at all costs, yet you can choose to become comfortable with nearly anything. We witness people who are comfortable in some senses in regard in very negative circumstances. But then we take Viktor Frankl, who took a same sense of urgency in very seemingly dire circumstances and was able to find comfort in that. There's a lot of disparity there. All I intend to say, take the time to ascertain how you create meaning of that comfort and how do you effectively apply that to be in service of yourself and others.
Yeah, you know, to me, when I hear you say that, it comes back to, again, being in a place of receptivity. Yeah. That's comfort to me. Because if I'm not receptive, I can't really move forward. Yeah. Like if I'm uncomfortable, if I'm unsafe, if I'm in that frantic state or that shutdown state, there's not growth. But we think that you have to be uncomfortable to grow. But I actually disagree with that. I think we have to learn through our bodies to be comfortable with discomfort, with the discomfort of the constriction, with the discomfort of tightness in our body. And our mind will automatically say, danger. Because that's where the constriction came from. The constriction came from being unsafe in the past. But now, as you sit with it, you are safe. Your mind is going to tell you you're dying and you're going to feel like you're dying. But the whole process of somatic work is knowing that you're not dying, that you are safe, and you can be with these sensations, which is so cool. And, you know, it's definitely a process. In the beginning, you feel and I often say, I feel like I'm dying, but I know I'm not.
And there again, it's hearkening back to that kind of stoic view of our emotions that can be of service. When you inherently feel things, when you have an emotional response to things, think it, feel it. That's the part of sensing it, process it. What meaning do I choose to give it? What meaning am I accepting of it? Accepting can be a positive or negative thing. Are you accepting with the limitation or are you accepting with the possibility? Process it, release it. Just let it go. You know, and that's a very, can seem somewhat simplistic view of just let it go, but that's a potential.
And, well, it's not just let it go. It's a process, right?
Yeah.
It's like the whole.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But ultimately, if you keep holding on to the part that keeps you stuck and you keep ruminating about it, you keep seeing the potential in the unsafe point, if you keep seeing the potential in possibly being hurt and possibly feeling bad, you're going to keep projecting into that energy of that potential. And that energy is going to attract in. That energy is going to be the reality you see. That energy is eventually just going to become the truth. Mm-hmm. A truth. And it's not to say that you can't also project that energy into a different sensing of truth.
Yeah.
Just be open to that potential. Where do I truly want to be? And what's keeping me from being there?
Your own patterns.
Your own patterns. And that's not to shame our patterns and be an asshole to them.
Yeah, for sure.
Because we can create those patterns that become more effective, or we can create those patterns that are ineffective or less effective.
Yeah, I like that. What's the other word that I really like? Discern. That's a word I love. And effective and effective. Exactly. And there's no shame in those words. There's no judgment. It's just like, is it working for you? Is it not?
Yeah. That to me, I'm going to point out an interesting point here and an instance I related to this week. I've been looking at this marketing app, marketing tool. I can't recall the name right off the top of my head that analyzes the SEO value of your post headlines, your blog headlines, you know, podcast title headlines to measure the effectiveness of the impact it's going to make on others. And one of the factors it evaluates is how much it pushes an emotional button. Mm-hmm. I found that astounding that we literally are putting that much attention on pushing the emotional buttons. Now, that in and of itself can become a trauma response from me as I look at that. How am I reacting to that? But the fact then is if we effectively leverage that potential, then you can also use this tool to say this might be a little bit more negatively loaded or pushing a pressure point that causes that ripple to go out and trigger someone else. Mm-hmm. It's all in how you look at the overall potential of it, utilize it. But I just was fascinated by that. You know, to me, in a lot of areas, I was fascinated by how much weight we put on the effectiveness of what we're communicated based on what it may or may not emotionally trigger in someone else.
I'm not surprised.
How aware of our responses then?
Yeah, I'm not surprised, but yeah. Mm-hmm.
That can go down a lot of different trails. That can also become weaponized in some ways. That's a thing of mine this week is being mindful, you know, is partially being responsible for how you are projecting out towards others.
Yeah.
You know, sure. Are you doing that in a way that's managing in a way that's of service to yourself first and of others?
Yeah. But I'm not surprised that they're trying, you know, emotions.
It was just interesting. I know that's a curveball today, but it's relevant because it does signal some of these things that often slip out of our awareness that allow us to move into that denial and that sometimes becomes that regressed state of trauma that mm-hmm. we're just simply not aware of yet.
Yeah. You know, I actually am so interested in like ethical marketing and yeah. just how we share things, even when we market things that we're selling. This is totally unrelated, but still important, I think, where we don't like trauma bond with our clients yeah. and we're not like not selling mm-hmm. them on their pain points all the time, which yeah. I used to do. I'm not going to lie, because that's what you're taught all the time. And then I was like, why am I doing this?
We are taught, you know, in the power of story. And so often what we do. Yeah, this is one that comes to my forefront. And I tend to shy away from it just because I have a lot of thoughts on how that keeps that energetic pattern, that energetic trauma alive in us. Mm-hmm. But if we're constantly going to that point, are we empowering somebody to move beyond it? If you're yeah. constantly going to the pain point, then how do we reconcile that with telling people or selling to the fact that what you think you become? If you're constantly thinking about the pain point and you're constantly dragging that energy back, then how are you becoming something else if that's the point of reference you continually root yourself in?
Yeah, you get attached to it. It's yeah. just like when I ask myself, what do I enjoy about being a victim? It's the attachment to the trauma. And that's why I kind of started being mindful about how I share even my own story of, if I share my own story and my own all kinds of different traumas from a non-reactive place in myself, mm-hmm. then that feels good. Then I can share that and I can talk about, you know, what did I learn from it? How did I grow from it? That's kind of the positive part of it instead of, oh, the heaviness and like the pain of, that's what I need to process yeah. on my own. That's not what I need to process with others, you know, like that's where my own processing comes in and I don't need to outsource it to my audience or wherever I'm sharing it.
That's to me where it becomes really relevant in illustrating that point. Are you going back to that reactive state or are you finding what was exposed to me recently at that neutral ground? You know, I was kind of kicked in a way, nudged, made aware of that point recently in a conversation I shared that finding that neutral ground sometimes releases us from that reactive point, allows us to accept it, allows us to release the shame. You know, we're not in that ruminating stage. That reactivity starts when you're in all of these judgments mm-hmm. rather than discerning.
You know, yeah, it's like more constriction onto yeah. the constriction when you're like judging it. And from a somatic point of view, One of the tools that I love to use is bouncing back and forth between in your body, constriction and openness, like areas that feel open and flowing and constriction. And that's what our body naturally does. It's like, it's called pendulation. Yes. And I'm doing this because it's like a pendulation motion. And eventually the pendulum stops in the middle, in the balance, you know, and that's exactly what we're doing.
And that's how that drama, that what we label drama, so often plays out. It's such a back and forth. It's back and forth inside yourself, back and forth between others. Let's look at that a little bit, at that pendulation, you know, how to sense some of that, because you did relate that in such a somatic experience. How do we allow that then to pull that into our forefront so we can become more aware of it?
You mean, how do we practice it?
Yeah. Yeah. What's a good way to put that into practice? Let's frame it that way.
Yeah. Well, it's literally, you know, you get triggered in the moment. You feel that constriction in your body. You stay with it for a moment, but not too long, to the point where you're overwhelmed. Yeah. And then you literally scan your body for an area that doesn't feel constricted. For me, usually it's my hands and my feet. And so I'll go there just mentally, just sense my hand and just stay with my hand. And then when I come back to my, say, my chest where it was constricted, it already starts to shift, and I'll notice the shift. Then I'll go back to my hand and I just go back and forth. Mm. And usually what I notice after this process with clients is they'll have, you know, like you'll notice that you'll actually notice that breath or that openness. And then they'll just sense openness, like the constriction moves through.
So Marina, if you have a client that says, but that to me seems like overthinking. You know, you're asking me to think about my hands and then back to my heart and, you know, to my rest of my body. How do I then move that into a state where it doesn't become that rumination and overthinking?
So it's more of focus. I would call it focus, like a meditative focus. So I'll have the person actually like close their eyes and just notice, like notice that. Stay with their chest, their sensation.
That's interesting. Often becomes a valid answer in that circumstance if you're experiencing it. That's interesting.
Yeah. Well, it could be. Yeah. And if that's their response,
it's
that's great.
Neutral, you know, that neutrality doesn't have to be a stigmatized, restrictive thing in and of itself. It doesn't have to create that resistance.
Yeah. And it's great if you get to the point where you say, that's interesting. That's an interesting sensation. In the beginning, it's usually like, whoa, like this is intense. You know, I can't stay there. Yeah. Start
that's
yawning. Yeah, for sure.
That consistency, that, you know, repetitiveness is just like everything else. We practice it until it becomes the new pattern.
Might try to go, as we stay with sensation, go back up to the mind. But then, you know, it's just like meditation. You come back to your breath, they tell you. But in this case, you come back to your body.
Yeah, and that sensing in the heart, you know, that tells us when things are restricting, that very real tightening of the chest when we feel when we're anxious, is that heart reaction. Mm-hmm. You know, is that heart action in the full physical sense? Those electrical magnetic currents radiate through our body, head to toe, throughout in a big circle that is somewhat repetitive in its pattern. That's just the natural flow, the best we know of energy in the universe.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's interesting to me to study things of that scientific nature. And when we illustrate that pattern, you see the picture of these little magic circles going round and round. Mm-hmm. It's a thought to look at, you know, and are you fighting the way those circles are flowing? Are you moving with them? Are you allowing those circles to tighten in on you, creating that perception they're tightening in on you, enforcing that perception? Are you just accepting them and letting them go, knowing that they'll come back around?
They will come back for sure.
No, and if you kind of get in that pattern and habit of beating it up and shaming it, that's what's going to come back around. It's like loading up the little trolley car that goes around the track. You know, just in Chicago, riding the train, call it the loop. You know, it comes back around. You get on the loop, you eventually come back where you started. What you step onto that train with, if you take it with you, you step off the train with. If you leave it on the train and get back on, nobody picks it up, it's going to still be there.
I love your metaphors.
Again, I'm trying to find that bigger picture. How do you relate that? Now in Chicago, if you leave anything on the train, there's a good chance it's not going to be there when you get back.
Well, then that's the projection, right?
And that's what happens in life. So often we project that out there. It's another good metaphor. We leave it on that train. Somebody else picks it up and they take it somewhere else. Totally. That's the trauma response.
Mm-hmm. They're picking it up. Yeah.
Which train are you getting on, baby? I think that's a great point to kind of leave things on today.
Yeah, I like that analogy for sure.
This has truly been a great, inspiring conversation. I thank you, Marina. You've brought such great insight to me today. And I have a whole new respect and appreciation for those that do the somatic bodywork. You know, you've allowed me to look at this in a whole new view today. Thank you for that.
Thank you. And all your analogies are also definitely staying with me.
Well, I would love to do this again. This has been such a fun chat. I feel like we could go on for another hour.
Yeah, for sure.
I would love to schedule that. Thank you. I am so grateful and so appreciative of you.
Thank you so much for having me on. This was great.
Where can we go to reach out to you, Marina, and experience all of this wonderful insight and connect with tuning into that somatic response?
Easiest place is on Instagram, just at marina.y.t.
Fantastic. I thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you for sure. Have a beautiful rest of your day.
You too. Thank you.
Emotions are a normal part of everyday life. We feel frustrated when we're stuck in traffic. And we feel sad when we miss our loved ones. And sometimes we can feel healthy anger when someone lets us down or does something that hurts us. While we expect to feel these emotions regularly, some people start to experience emotions that are more volatile. They feel higher highs and lower lows as these peaks and valleys begin to impact their lives. At times, those experiencing intense emotions may find themselves calm in one moment and then sad or angry the next. While many of us can have times when our emotions spin out of control, for some people, this happens regularly. While our rapid changing emotions can cause us to do and say things we later regret, even going so far as to damage relationships or hurting our overall healthy sense of credibility with others. In this regard, learning to effectively navigate our emotional trauma is not only essential, it's also a key aspect of self-actualization. We hope this episode brings a new light to addressing your own personal trauma triggers. If you found this message meaningful, please share it with a friend or loved one. As always, we're grateful for you, our valued listening community. Until next time, this has been The Light Inside. I'm Jeffrey Biesecker.